to another episode of Wisdom Chat. And my very special guest today is Tony Redondo. Welcome back, Tony.
Thank you very much, Phil. Thank you for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. Tony's a multi-award winning foreign currency exchange expert. That's where I can get my teeth in. But we've just been having a bit of a chat about how we perceive 2024 working out. Tony, just give us some top level thoughts, because there's a lot going on, isn't there? And in one of your last posts on LinkedIn, you talked about an uncertain world in a sense. Just sort of fill that out a little bit in terms of your thinking at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, whichever aspect of life or the financial markets, any other factors, whether it be economic or political, that you look at, this year is absolutely tailor-made for uncertainty. You've got 90% of democracies having general elections this year.
Wow. I never realized that.
It is the year of elections. All the way from India, the biggest democracy in the world. Of course, the UK, we've got to have a general election before January next year. You've got the American elections. You've got some very, very, in November, you've got some very big European Union elections in June, which, given the rise of the sort of right-wing parties, as they're described in the media, with the new prime minister in Holland, for example, a right-wing Finnish prime minister, you could have a call for other countries to start following Britain out of the EU. The odds on that could shorten dramatically. So I think it's a dramatic year in terms of elections. Mm. Then you look even further afield, and of course, there's lots going on in the Middle East after the Hamas attacks on Israel on October the 7th, and what's opening up in Gaza. You've got the Houthis, and it hasn't really hit the sort of day-to-day newspapers yet, Phil. But, shipping costs have gone up by 30% in the last 3 months. Wow. Because all the goods that we all, click buttons on online shopping or go down to local shops and buy these days, most of them, of course, come from China and the Far East. And now, instead of going, getting to the Indian Ocean and cutting across the Red Sea and into Europe, because of the actions, the Houthis in Yemen, now they're having to go all the way around Africa.
I know. And that puts an awful lot of time on their journey, doesn't it?
It does.
And cost.
And ultimately cost. So shipping costs have gone up over 30%. That hasn't filtered through yet to the inflation rates. Mm-hmm. There's always a time lag. And I think that's why a lot of the major central banks, we started the year thinking that the likes of the Federal Reserve in the United States are going to cut interest rates four times quite aggressively this year, and the Bank of England are going to follow suit, and everybody just put the brakes on. And I think that's because they can see these things happening, but it hasn't filtered through to the economic data yet. And what they don't want to do is create even more instability. Can you imagine if you are a business, if you're running your own business or you're about to change house and interest rates have gone up from 0.1% to 5.25, then they get cut again, imagine, and you think, great, okay, I'm going to move house, I'm going to expand my business, I'm going to buy a new business premises or do this or do that. And 2 months later, interest rates go back up again. So I think, to be fair to the Bank of England, who have come in for a tremendous amount of criticism, in my view, most of it pretty well deserved. Okay, but to be fair to them, I think they're just sitting on their hands just to see whether it's just a blip and the Americans and the Western forces can gain control of the Arabian Straits and allow passage, via the Red Sea, or it's going to carry on. Because if it's a blip, then there might be a one monthly figures of inflation that will go up a bit, but it can be explained away.
Right.
If there's still, you know, ships being hijacked and everything in 3, 6 months' time, we've got a real problem on our hands.
Yeah.
You
And
know?
I suppose as well, we're talking about conflict and the impact on global economy. Obviously, the conflict in Ukraine.
Yes.
And that's still very much an issue.
To be
And
resolved now.
yeah, and we're not quite sure which way it's going to go. You've got the House of Representatives holding back on agreeing a budget to invest in Ukraine. And so all this, no doubt, will have an impact
Yeah, absolutely.
on our everyday pocket.
And again, another new level of uncertainty in Northern Europe now is, of course, that for the first time, both Finland and Sweden are members of NATO.
Yeah.
And NATO, the NATO Accords are very simple. You know, if one country gets attacked, they all get attacked,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
they all jump in.
Yeah.
So if Putin gets desperate and attacks Finland, or attacks Sweden, or attacks Poland, another NATO member, it could very quickly escalate. Very quickly escalate.
I think, do you think though, in that just in that area alone, I don't mean geographically, but in that mindset, that even with Putin, whatever anybody thinks of him, surely, and I might be wrong here, but surely he's a man who can see the potential and recognize it's not going to be just the West that will be affected, it's going to be Russia and his standing that would be affected as well. And I see a man there who's clinging to power
Oh,
and he's
completely.
using whatever means to do so.
Completely. Yeah. It's very much, you know, the Russian economy, the Russian, sorry, the Russian economy, he's trying to portray the Russian economy as being unaffected. It's very badly affected by the sanctions, and the sanctions announced by Washington after the death of Navalny last week are only going to intensify the pressure. And I think, you know, there are two countries in the world that could have major impact militarily, economically, politically, and both are under quite tight time frames to either force the world to accept their way, or there's going to be major change. And one of them is Russia, because I think the economy is in trouble. So he either makes big gains and there is a change in direction by the West in the comment, or forcing the Ukrainians to the peace table and coming to an accommodation, or isn't days are numbered. And then, of course, the other area of the world, which occasionally comes into the news, but you know, in the middle pages, never the headlines, is China and Taiwan, where for two reasons, I think, you know. In my personal point of view, Phil, China's best days are behind it, not in front of it. Militarily, you've got the military pact between the US, the UK, and Australia, where Australia are going to have nuclear submarines from 2025. So all of a sudden, they're no longer dependent on US nuclear umbrella for protection. And that could extend out to Japan and the Philippines and even Taiwan. So the Chinese know that they've got quite a short time frame if they're going to invade, you know. And the Chinese stock market has had a terrible time in the last 12 months. And there's been not billions, but trillions of dollars taken out of the Chinese stock markets by Western investors. And, you know, none other than Goldman Sachs, one of the two biggest banks in the world, with JP Morgan, are saying that the next 2 decades belong to India, not China.
So we're going to see potentially a huge shift. And just in terms of posturing, then you can kind of understand why
Exactly.
China has been obviously putting Taiwan under pressure,
Yes.
and building that sort of almost perceived threat. of invasion there. But yeah, so that's on a global scale, and that in itself doesn't necessarily fill you with optimism, does it?
No, it doesn't.
but having said that, you know, you remember last time we talked about the doom mongerers.
And
in a way that can feel like that when you hear of all these things going on. Now they are going on, we know that.
Yeah.
But if we bring it back more to home, we've got influences directly on us at home. How do we see things going? We're in an election year potentially, yes. And so there's going to be an interesting sort of development there. And I think you said to me, you said you don't feel it's a foregone conclusion, given the what the pundits are saying and what the polls are saying. And yet there are certain mindsets that may or may not agree with one another, America and UK.
Yeah.
What sort of things are you seeing at the moment, and what are the murmurings going on that you might feel will come into play as they go forward into the year?
Well, I think, you know, the recession has been very shallow. In my viewpoint, it's already over.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a very, very shallow recession, unusually so for the UK, which is a good thing for us. We have got an election this year. It's got to be held before January next year. But even the timing of that can be quite interesting because, again, you know, if you're the governing party and you're consistently 20, 25 points behind the opposition, it doesn't take too much of a political genius to work out that you let the clock run down as long as possible, particularly with the budget coming up next week, where, according to some pundits, the government could have as much as £10 billion headroom to give away in tax cuts. You know, they cut national insurance contribution rates in the autumn statement last year. That kicked in January. So people should have seen that, you know, been 2% better off in terms of not having to pay so much national insurance contributions.
Yeah.
So for those two reasons, I suspect we're going to have a late election. I would imagine sort of no earlier than November. And that could be another interesting point because, of course, you've got the American elections at the beginning of November.
Yeah.
And Trump is so far ahead. And Biden's approval rates are so bad that it's pretty hard to see any other result other than the Trump re-election.
Yeah.
And then from a British point of view, I wonder how many British voters are going to think about what the dynamic would be between, on the one hand, Trump and Sunak, or Trump and Starmer.
Yeah.
Where the latter probably wouldn't be able to agree on anything.
that's an interesting one. I mean, you know, obviously I've got my own sort of personal views in terms of how I think things are. I think one of the things that I've come up against quite a bit of late, and going back to this whole thing to do with uncertainty, and that is people saying to me, who do I vote for?
Yeah.
You know, and but when you think about that combination, like Sunak and Trump, just on the funny side, I mean, Trump's a tall chap, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know,
big guy.
And Rishi's not as tall. And as I said before, he wears his trousers at half mast. I don't wish to be derogatory, but yeah, sorry.
You know, I never realised, Phil, that you're a member of the fashion police.
Yeah.
You're full of surprises. You are full of surprises.
I know. But I just, do you remember when, not Liz Truss, I'm just trying to remember now. Previous PM who went and visited Trump.
Yes.
And it was the way he shook her hand. And I thought he's a power player.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we mentioned, didn't we, about the fact that, you know, we don't get that impression that Sunak is a leader as such, although he's leading a party, he's more a follower. And how will he cope with somebody like a Trump? And also, my impression is we seem to love to follow the Americans. Some of the stuff that we do and decisions we make, it's almost as if we're only doing that because the Americans do that. We seem to think, oh, they've got it made, or yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and, yeah, no, absolutely right. And in fact, you know, in a perverse way, if you like, a Trump election would not be bad news for the UK for two reasons. One is we'll go back to the top of the queue for a post-Brexit trade deal.
Right.
And it's not for nothing that the American economy is by far the biggest in the world. It's just under a quarter of the whole global economy is the US economy.
Wow.
You know, and California, the economy by itself is bigger than France's and the UK's.
Yeah,
that's just California.
But,
and secondly, you know, that recent controversy where Trump had a go at the Europeans for their lack of defense spending.
Yeah.
Where typically of politicians, they all agreed to increase defense spending up to a certain percentage of GDP. Hardly any country has done it.
Yeah.
A few smaller Eastern European and Central European countries, because obviously it's their self-interest to do so with the Russians on their doorstep. Britain has, Germany hasn't, France hasn't, Spain hasn't, Italy hasn't, Portugal hasn't. So again, you know, a Trump presidency could actually be good news for this country for those two reasons, you know, because... You know, you're helping the military spending and lightening the load for this country, but also a post-Brexit trade deal. You know, the trade deal that we've signed with Australia is excellent. I think we'll get one with India. I think Kemi Badenoch has done a really good job as Trade and Industry Secretary.
Right.
I think there is a trade deal coming up with India, which would be excellent. But nothing will be bigger than a deal with the United States. They'll just completely open the doors.
I can quite understand if people are looking from economic certainty, how that could be beneficial in terms of a trade deal with the States. And also, there's that natural human... element of safety, the need for safety that kicks in. So somebody like a Trump and his approach to, you know, defensive spending would actually give people perhaps an element of safety. But I think the flip side of the coin is he doesn't seem to be one for, you know, His comment about NATO nations who are not paying their way, well, if they get attacked, well, pay your way and then we'll come and help you, and type of thing. You know, that we've not heard that before, and then all of a sudden Trump is the one who says it, and then you're thinking about the situation with Ukraine and the House of Representatives actually stalling. Agreement over, you know, spending or giving Ukraine a budget to replenish their armaments. And you're thinking, okay, well, if that doesn't happen, you know, what's that going to, you know, mean for gaining stability? I've never seen, apart from when you went to North Korea, I've not seen Trump necessarily, or I don't feel he's a great ambassador in one sense. He's very good at getting people's backs up because of his views on stuff, but equally, you know, maybe Russia and China might like him because he's willing to talk with them, and you know, at the end of the day, there needs to be some dialogue going on, else these things will never be resolved.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, it's that's going to be an interesting one. And then bringing it right to, you know, our doorstep in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you look at the market as it presently stands, 4% inflation rate, you've got 5.25% interest rates from the Bank of England. They've been holding them, held them for the last, 4 months? You're looking at the average savings accounts over 5%. So now money's actually increasing in value, you know, in the mindsets of people. And I would have to add for the listeners, that's not for all savings accounts. So make sure you shop around and check out what the rates and the criteria for those rates are. That's really important.
Yeah,
but when you put all that in place, and like your comment about you feel that we've actually come out of that recession because it was so shallow, and you're thinking, well, why are we not yet feeling any form of optimism and certainty? You know, what else is really going on that's potentially impacting us?
It's certainly given the area that, you know, I've spent my working life working in. As we were talking, you know, before this, that it does, you know, only 60% of the client base of Cosmos Currency Exchange is UK based. So nearly half of our clients are based overseas, and they're spread out all over the world. But what it means is that in dialogue with those clients, you do get a much more rounded view of what's happening locally with them and their perception of the UK compared to just relying on the UK media.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is an old saying that bad news sells newspapers, and goodness, isn't that the truth? You know, but actually,
yeah, it is.
But actually, I think the outlook for this country is excellent. Really do. And that's not, you know, one of the, that is no ulterior motive on my part. That's not me trying to talk the market up because it's in my favor. Because nearly half my clients are buying sterling and half my clients are selling sterling. So there is nothing in it for me to talk the market in one direction or another, because whichever direction it goes in, I will have clients that I can alert to that fact and they can take advantage of it. But I genuinely feel, you know, Germany's best days are behind it. You know, Germany is in an awful mess. It was the lowest growth G10 economy in 2023. It will be again in 2024. It's in a hell of a mess. The French economy is not much better, and you've got French elections as well. So what will happen there? Spain and Italy. So I think the outlook for this country is surprisingly positive, even if we don't get a trade deal with the United States. I think in the long term, the trade deal that Kemi Badenoch signed last autumn with, you know, the likes of Singapore and Canada and India is going to make very, very big dividends. It's already responsible for 13% of global trade, and it's only going to grow. It's only going to grow. And the dynamics are changing. As I mentioned to you off air, you know, Goldman Sachs at the turn of the year sent out a research paper advising their clients to, you know, that they, if they're still investing in China, that really, you know, China's best days are behind it. The Chinese, you know, stock market has seen trillions of dollars taken out of it in the last 3 months. Really, really, you know, very big withdrawals. And Goldman Sachs are recommending their clients that the next big economic superpower is India. Now, again, that has massive implications for the UK because, of course, it's a former colony, speaks English, it's a democracy. It could be very, very good news, you know, for the UK. So I actually feel very optimistic. The other thing I think that helps, Phil,
Yeah.
is an age thing. You know, if you're, with due respect to sort of 30, 40-year-olds, if you are sort of late 20s, early 30s, the last 2 years has been a hell of a shock for you. And I can totally understand that. Because up until 2 years ago, all you'd known since you left school, went to college, went to university, started work, maybe bought your first property, were next to zero interest rates.
Yeah,
And that's
yes.
all you'd ever known.
Yeah,
And then all of
yeah.
a sudden, they go from 0.1% at the end of 2021 to 5.25 by summer of 23,
Yeah.
14 consecutive monthly rises.
Yeah.
And you think, well, you know, it's that roller coaster, isn't it? It's going up and up and up and up
Yeah.
and up. You know, and you think, where is this going to go? Whereas the perception is, you know, for me, I remember paying a mortgage rate of 17% in 1991.
Oh, do you know, I was just thinking that, because I wasn't 17% for me, got to 15%. I remember, paying for a mortgage,
Yeah.
and then not so long after that, learning that endowment mortgages weren't all that they were cut out to be,
Yeah, exactly.
or what we've been promised. So, I mean, it was kind of a double whammy in a sense, but
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah,
You
and
know, I remember that. You know, I
yeah.
remember paying 15%. I remember paying 17%. So am I happy paying 5%? Of course I'm not happy paying 5%. I'd rather pay 0.1%.
Yeah.
But I've been there
Yeah.
before. We survived it. And I guess the mindset is just different, isn't it? I remember, you know, back in 91, 92, there was a massive property crash, big recession, Black
Yeah.
Wednesday, interest rates go up to, you know, 15, 17%. And it was so brutal so quickly that there was not a lot to think. It wasn't actually, in a perverse way, when I look back on it wasn't particularly stressful because there was nothing to think about. It's
Yeah,
not a question of, shall we have one holiday or two? This year there will be no holiday, you know, because there won't be, because our mortgage rates have tripled. You know, our mortgage
yeah.
payments have tripled.
I tell you what we've seen in the market as well, Tony, is I was just looking at employment, and that there's been a sort of slight drop in unemployment,
Yes.
so a positive there. But I do know companies struggle to recruit,
Yes.
and there are lots of reasons for that, not just in terms of you can't get the skills and so on. But so there's that side, and also, as you were kind of alluded to as in our sort of off-air conversation, about the fact that mortgage rates could potentially go back up again. And you're thinking, when you think of all these things, I'm just thinking, the everyday person in the street, how must they be feeling right now? And I think that word uncertainty epitomizes perhaps how they may be feeling. So you've got your media, the doom mongerers, saying one thing, but in actual fact, the reality says something different. Not necessarily that it gives everybody a real solid hope, because who knows which way things will swing this year in terms of all these global elections going on.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the average person will just say, yeah, but what about me right now? And one of the biggest things that I've seen increase is in-work poverty. There's a lot more people being affected by these higher costs,
Yes.
with and I'll
Utility bill.
just ask you to explain it a little bit. But obviously, shipping costs, one area, but another one in terms of the utility costs.
Yeah.
And now, people may or may not be aware, but utility costs, particularly your gas and electricity, should, I think the price cap is going to come down, and it
Yeah.
should start to affect many of us from April
That's
onwards.
right.
But is that sort of too little too late for some people? I don't know.
You'll always be, you know, too little,
Yeah.
too late for, you know, for certain sectors. It is, it does all add up to uncertainty
Yeah.
because there is so much going on. And again, one of the big differences I find is that If I cast my mind back to, again, the early 90s that we were talking about, the last time interest rates were, or at 15% and 17% and what have you, there's been a cultural change as well, because two things. One, in those days, there was no internet. There was no email. So information was much more immediate and personal and local. And the second point is that real bank managers still existed. So the average man in the street who'll go in and talk to somebody with 20, 30, 40 years experience, everybody had at least an annual review with the bank manager. And you could go in and chat about things, and the bank manager knew you, and he was tended to be the same bank manager for at least 5 years, before they got moved on. And so there was that continuity.
I do remember those days, and I must admit, I do miss those days of
Absolutely.
that sort of
Whereas
personal touch.
now, where do the youngsters get information from? TikTok? Great.
And you can tell as well how there's such a lot of misinformation and fake information
Exactly.
out there.
Exactly.
It's you know, and it's so therefore you can understand why, you know, people are looking kind of bemused and thinking, well, yeah, so where do I go? Where do I get the answers? Who do I vote for? Who's gonna look after my best interests and so on going
Exactly.
forward? So
Exactly. And of course, in between general elections, let's face it, this government won an 80-seat majority in 2019, the biggest majority since the mid-80s. And even if you're a staunch conservative, I would suggest to you that they haven't exactly got a lot to show for that 80-seat majority. So that's been chipping away, chipped away, chipped away, because each by-election can be seen as A, very local to that ward, to that actual seat, and B, a bit of a protest vote. And against a background where interest rates have gone from 0.1 to 5.25, where utility bills have gone through the roof, petrol has gone through the roof, we've got the highest tax stake since the end of the Second World War. Why on earth would you not punish the government in a protest vote? But that is very different mindset to whenever this general election is held. It's not a protest vote. It's got to be a positive vote. It's got to not be, I'm going to punish the Tories because they've messed up this or they've messed up that, or I don't agree with them this or what have you. That's enough for a by-election. It's a protest vote. Whereas a general election is, I don't like what these guys have done for the last 4 or 5 years, but looking at the parties and their policies and what they're talking about and what have you, who do I feel more comfortable with in the next 5 years? And Phil, as you know, I'm completely apolitical. I don't I've never been, I believe in the Groucho Marx saying, I that I've never belonged to a club that would accept you. So, I'll never join a political party, under any circumstances. But when you look at what the Tories haven't done, that's one aspect. But when you look at how often Keir Starmer changes his mind, it's no wonder the Tory party strategists call him Mr. Flip-Flop, because quite frankly, he seems to say whatever the next expedient thing happens to say. Now, is that
I'd
somebody that
agree.
you want to positively vote for? So I think the election is going to be held very late. I'll be surprised if it's held before November, and I think it's going to be a lot closer than these 20, 30 percentage points in the opinion polls will lead you to believe.
I think
I
the
really
thing
do.
that the message, if we're really honest about it, the message at the moment coming from the general populace is, who do I vote for? There's a real sort of that there's nothing there that inspires people
No,
in a
there
real
isn't.
positive way.
That's right.
There's
I
going to
would
be
agree with that.
decisions made this year that are going to be political decisions as opposed to what's best necessarily for the nation. I think we're going to see elements of that. So, for example, the budget, tax cuts. People will say, great, fantastic, you know, more money in my wage packet. However, where's that going to come from? Who's going to pay for it? And it's got to come from somewhere. And we'll probably see things like the NHS, a further demise in the NHS, because, at the end of the day, there isn't sufficient monies going in there to cope with the demand for their services. And people are burning out.
And yet, and you say that, and yet again, coming again, because nearly half my clients are overseas, so I'm having daily conversations with people outside the UK, there is quite a lot of information that you can gather outside the UK about the UK that is harder to gather when you're inside the UK, which is quite perverse, really. But I didn't realize until quite recently, Phil, that the NHS is the best well-funded national health service in the world. And has never had more funding as per part of GDP than it has in the last parliament. It's
I'm
over
sure,
10%.
yeah, I'm sure that is the case, without a doubt. But your everyday activity is around, or information coming out is around waiting lists.
Of course.
And one, perhaps one of the biggest things is the waiting list for cancer treatment. That is quite, hard hitting for many people. And
Absolutely.
so. So
Completely.
yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? What's going on? What's probably going to influence people in terms of their voting decisions? But also at the same time, how do they feel about the economy? It doesn't help when the media keep telling us, we're in a recession, and actually you're thinking, yeah, but on the one hand, there's these positives. Yes, we appreciate. And not taking away from the fact that there are a lot more people who are struggling to make ends meet in the UK today. And this whole thing to do with there's been money set aside to help and support people, but they're not being told what money there is set aside to help them. You have to know, and then ask the right question. And I think there's something wrong here. With regards to our system, it's almost like there's quite a few things that are broken that we really do need to fix and get sorted, and we need to also take stock of what is
Exactly right.
valuable here. We can focus on money, but at the end of the day, money's just a tool, isn't it? And it's the people who make the
It is
decisions on
exactly
how
right.
that tool is going to be used. And if we're not looking after people, it's like a vicious cycle. So,
It is. And I don't think there's enough of, personally, again, Phil, it doesn't take too much to work out that it's great that the out-of-work benefits are as high as they are, because there are all kinds of circumstances where, in an advanced society, we should look after those that are unable to look after themselves. Absolutely. Goes without saying. We're the fifth biggest economy in the world, the oldest democracy. Of course, you should. But there's still got to be a gap between that and people go to work. Otherwise, you end up with a situation that we're currently beginning to get in, where the working age population that's economically inactive is in double percentage figures. Double percentage figures. 11% of 16 to 65-year-olds in this country are economically inactive. Now, within that 11%, there'll be loads and loads of people who totally justified. But I don't think I'm being Trump-like controversial, okay, in suggesting that there
Oh,
might be a
go
few people
on,
on there. There might be a few people there who think, why do I want to do shift work or have a 0 hours contract or work at the night shift or get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to start a 6 o'clock in the morning shift, when I'm only going to get paid by the time they take off tax and national insurance and I have travel costs and this, that, and the other, the gap between that and benefits is so little, I might as well stay in bed and watch daytime TV. It's a character. I know I'm portraying a caricature, and I apologize for that. But when the figures are so high, when it's now into double figures, The
It's,
economic
yeah.
inaction. There is a problem. There's a structural problem within society.
And I think there's a number of issues in there, because one of the things that's very clear is there's 19 billion unclaimed benefits. So that comes to the point of which, you know, people are not being informed in terms of what they are actually entitled to. So that's one thing. And the fact that they're going to take from the benefits to fund other things, that's what's been spoken of. I'm thinking, hang on a minute. So you've got individuals who, so for example, growing in work population who probably are entitled to some benefits but wouldn't think so themselves. And in some cases, depending on the generation, probably wouldn't even want it because they'd feel ashamed when they shouldn't do. So there's all sorts of issues going on here which we're not really addressing. And it all has an impact on
Course it
things
has.
like inflation, you know, because it's the money go round that's not going round because,
That's right.
you know, people are not necessarily spending. Goods are significantly higher. Even the average spend in the supermarket is significantly higher than it has been. And so for some people, they are really struggling even to be able to afford decent meals. So there's a lot of that going on. And then you will have, and I agree with you'll have a proportion of that 11 million you're talking about who actually their whole attitude is probably wrong with regards to working and contributing, paying their way in some respects. I mean, if they couldn't get work, but they're out there volunteering and helping in some other way, you can understand it and accept it.
Absolutely.
But if they are just, you know, watching daytime TV or staying in bed or whatever, then yeah, there's some questions to be asked about that.
Has to be.
Unfortunately, it's the people who have the right attitude and want to work, probably working several jobs just to make ends meet, who are the ones who'll end up getting penalised.
A friend of ours, as you know, we're lucky enough to live in Cornwall, which is, you know, a very nice part of the world.
It is.
So I'll just put, I'll throw that in there, because actually there's a strange yellow object up in the sky today, which we haven't seen for weeks.
Oh,
So
dear me. Yeah, and somebody was telling me the sea's even bluer there now.
now a friend of ours works at a local food bank, a quite senior position, so responsible for quite a few branches throughout Cornwall and Devon and
Right.
Dorset. And their statistics show, at least locally, I don't know if these are national statistics, but
Yeah.
certainly in the southwest, the biggest growth of people visiting them
Yeah.
for everyday goods is not the unemployed, it's not people on benefits, is working people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you think that's got to be wrong.
Yeah. There was a comment made by an MP in the Houses of Parliament. I don't think he really actually stopped to think about what he was actually saying. And he perhaps didn't mean how it was actually taken. And he says, isn't it great that more people are using food banks? And it was like, what? You know, actually, that is not good in the first place.
Exactly.
But I think I just wonder if he was actually meaning it's great that more people are able to access this help and support that's there. Not necessarily it's good that there's more people in that position who needs it.
That's right.
I might be being too kind to him. He
No,
might have meant what
I
he
think it's
said
a
in the first.
positive.
Yeah.
It's very easy to jump on the, you know, jump up and
It is.
down and criticize straight away. But to be
Yeah.
fair, you know, to whoever it was, there is at least a chance that
Yeah.
he was meaning it that way. Thank, you know, thank goodness, you
Yeah.
know,
Yeah.
because there are so many parts of the world where the things that we completely take for granted in this country
Yeah.
will be seen as an absolute luxury.
Yeah. And they would. And I know I spoke with a friend of mine on a much earlier podcast about his travels around the Far East. And during COVID, he got stuck in Vietnam.
Oh.
But he said, do you know the thing that really struck me was even the poorest people seem to be really happy. And he said, it really baffled him why they were so happy, yet they had so little. And we ended up having a chat about it. But you're right, it was what they would expect. That, you know, they hadn't had certain things that we've been, you know, had opportunity to have or to engage with. And so therefore they didn't have that expectation, and they'd learned to be grateful for what they had. Whereas sometimes I think in Western society, we can be guilty for, you know, we have, and yet we're not happy because we want more. You know, so, and I know I generalize, and you know, it's not everybody, but sometimes we have to learn to be sort of grateful for what we've got,
Absolutely.
and appreciate it, rather than always looking for what we don't
Yes.
have.
No, exactly. Absolutely. I think that's a very fair point. But it's also a cultural thing, isn't it, Bill? You
It
know,
is.
and again, going back to, you know, the time when interest rates are much higher, and you get that perspective that, okay, they've gone from virtually nothing to 5%, but that's still only a third of what I've already paid previously, you know, once in my life. So therefore, you know, let's not panic here. You know, it's not good, not happy with it, but it's been a lot worse, and we coped then, so we'll cope now, that kind of attitude. But also, I think, you know, going back to your friend in Vietnam, I wonder if some of it, I think, is that with modern technology, as clever as it is, and it is amazingly clever, you know, when you were thinking, or when you think, I was talking about this with a neighbor's son who's into astronomy, and something I'm into as well. So we were chatting away, and like, you know, when you think about that, human civilization was around for about 10,000 years, and then the first flight was like in 1910 or 1911 or wherever it was, you know, with the Wright brothers. And 60 years later, we're on the moon.
I
I mean,
know.
if you were to plot that in a graph, A, you'd be a very long graph, and B, you'd be very flat for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, douche, in
I
that
know.
60-year period, we've gone from first flight to, and thinking about that in terms of technology, perhaps one of the things that helps people in Vietnam in a perverse way is, I wonder what the social media take up in countries like Vietnam is, probably a lot lower than ours, because this often occurs to me, like, you know, and I look back at my life, you know, and, you know, sitting around, you know, music, for example, is this one example off the top of my head. Music has always been important for me. Okay. And so, you know, 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, it was the top 40. And you sort of listen around the radio, you know, to listen to what was up and what was down. And because somebody else was choosing the music, you had to listen to all sorts. Some of it you liked, some of it you didn't, but at least you were exposed to quite a broad range of music styles. You know, now everybody's got their own playlists on whatever music streaming device they use. So it becomes like a sound box, doesn't it? It becomes an echo chamber. And I think a lot of it, like politics, has gone that way as well, where, you know, you only get the news from the sites that you've ticked a box to say that you want to get the news from, you know, so you don't have that broad. You know, we were talking earlier about getting financial information. In my day, you know, when I started in the City of London, there was no internet, there were no computers, and bank managers were bank managers. So everybody had a basic bank account, and you had a review once a year where you sat in front of your bank manager and chatted away about how you'd done in the last 12 months, what your plans were for the next 12 months, and what have you. Now, how many people actually go into a bank branch these days? Would you actually meet the same person twice? If you phone up online banking, if you phone them up telephone banking, would you have to start the conversation from scratch every time because there's no continuity?
I mean, you're right. We are showing our age a little bit, by the way.
Well, with our hairstyles, Phil, I don't think, you know, there's not a
I know. But you know, when you're talking both in terms of branch managers and so on in the banks, I used to you know really appreciate that. Although it was scary, so it did make you think about your finances and so on. But when you're talking about social media, I think social media's had a probably quite a negative impact, and has caused an awful lot of problems without going into all of them here. But certainly, it's had an impact, and perhaps where there are societies that don't necessarily have that access, maybe it's a good thing in some respects. But there'll always be that sense of, well, look what technology can do and how this could make my life a lot better. And we look at that, but we don't necessarily see the flip side of it. And yeah, so there's pros and cons each way, isn't
Like
there?
always, like everything.
Yeah.
But again, showing my age again, I grew up in an East London council estate in the 70s. So, the idea of, hand-me-down clothes and, dad coming home with his wages in cash and mum with various biscuit tins or jars and, putting coins for the rent and coins for the electric meter. And for the food and that, and no credit cards, no credit, no
No,
overdrafts, no credit
no.
card. You didn't have it, you didn't spend it. And because some people didn't have a TV, some people might have had a black and white TV, that kind of thing. But everybody was in the same boat, and everybody that lived around you was in the same boat, or your classmates are in the same boat. So you don't miss what you've never had. Whereas now, of course, you've got this little gadget connecting you to the world. And invariably, what you're doing is you're looking at some rich kid in Dubai or some rich kid in Florida or what have you.
Yeah, I know. And so then people are thinking, well, I want to be like that. There's this comparison
And it
going on.
causes anxiety, it causes stress, it causes anxiety.
I was just thinking about what you're saying about, you know, the time span from the very first flight, Orville and Wilbur Wright, to Armstrong putting the first step on the moon, being of a certain you know period, what, 60 years or whatever, to now the conversations around putting a base on the moon and then launching from there to Mars.
Yes,
And
absolutely.
actually now looking and thinking, it's doable. You know, we're not that far off from accomplishing those.
Well,
How?
India have now gone to the moon. Obviously, China have, India have, Japan have. And over the weekend, you had, the first private company.
Although it did topple over, apparently.
It had a bit of a, I
A
think
bit of a wobble.
they had a gin or two too much.
So just Tony, in closing then, you know, I get the impression that your message at this moment in time would be, even though there is a lot of uncertainty, yet underlying there is a lot of positive hope as well.
Yes.
So
And uncertainty is often these days, certainly in the media, in the mainstream media, portrayed as a negative. And of course, it can be. But it can also be a positive. It also can be the source of opportunities. And I think if the average person in the street, where they get their media from, it's very easy to be swayed towards a negative because at least 90% of their input is going to be negative. Whereas I guess, again, I count my blessings in a sense, Phil, the very nature of the financial markets that I work in, it's all relative, And if an exchange rate, if the pound goes up in value against currency X, it's good for some. It's bad if you're holding X and you're trying to buy the pound. That's bad because you're then going to buy less pounds because the value has gone against you. But the flip side of that coin is that if you are a pound seller and you're looking to buy that currency, it's good because you're going to buy more of that currency. So all my working life has been involved in a world where at most there's always just 50% bad. There's always a flip side to the coin. There's always somebody coming back the other way. And I guess after so many years of being involved in the markets, you just end up with this mindset where, yes, I can see uncertainty can have negatives. Of course it can. But it can also have opportunities.
And I think that, sort of, bringing this to a wrap, I think that's what we really need to say, isn't it? That don't just look at the uncertainties, the negatives, but also recognize some of the positives that are going on, and what is positive. Even I would say to people, even if you're at the moment, in a difficult place, it's the ability to be grateful for what you do have, rather than constantly looking at what you don't have. I'm not saying that life isn't difficult for some people, because I know it is, and there's a lot of help and support out for those people. But there are some people who, don't really need to worry about their finances, but they do because, a percentage point drop in interest rates, might be the loss of however many thousands of pounds on their portfolio. Yet they're still comfortable. And I think what they need to do is actually say, yes, it's a shame I've lost this amount, but at the end of the day, I'm okay, and I need to be thankful for that as well.
Absolutely. Exactly right. Yeah. Absolutely. 100%.
Tony, it's been absolutely wonderful talking with you again, as always. And I really do appreciate your time and sharing your wisdom with us. And
all go that far, but thank you for.
No, but I do appreciate your time, and I mean we could talk for ages, I'm sure, but obviously time doesn't permit right now, so thank you so much, Tony, and all the best.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you.